The sound of voices from the dining room below brought Lucy running out of the drawing room. She had only wanted a quick look, to put a candlestick straight, to smooth her hand over a chair, and then to pause for a moment and feel how beautifully cared for everything would appear to everyone who came in. But people were already coming upstairs after dinner. She must fly down to the kitchen. The Prime Minister was coming, Agnes said, returning to the kitchen with a tray of glasses. She had heard them saying so in the dining room when she was serving. But did Mrs. Walker, the cook, care at all if a Prime Minister was coming, with her kitchen upside down like this? Did one person more or less right now make any difference to Mrs. Walker among all the plates, pans, lemons, bread, soup bowls and pudding bowls, which seemed to be all on top of her, and so much still to be done? They were going up to the drawing room already, said Lucy, and Mrs. Dalloway had sent a message down to the kitchen. My love to Mrs. Walker. And how lovely Miss Elizabeth looked in her pink dress, Lucy said. And there was the front doorbell already. Now the guests would come faster and faster. The hall would soon be full of gentlemen waiting while the ladies went to the room along the corridor to take off their cloaks. And old Mrs. Barnett, who had been with the family for 40 years, would be waiting there to help them. She came every summer, remembered mothers when they were girls, and in spite of their fine cloaks, knew perfectly well which were nice ladies and which were not. Mrs. Barnett, Clarissa's old nanny, is such a dear old thing, said Lady Lovejoy to her daughter as they climbed the stairs. Then, standing stiff and tall beside Mr. Wilkins, who was hired for parties, at the top of the stairs, she said to him, Lady and Miss Lovejoy.
Lady and Miss Lovejoy, announced Wilkins, who bowed and stood straight admirably between each announcement. Sir John and Lady Needham. Miss Weld. Mr. Peter Walsh.
How delightful to see you, said Clarissa to Peter. She said it to everyone. How delightful to see you. She was at her worst, insincere, shallow. It was a great mistake to have come, for he knew no one. Oh, it was going to be a complete failure, Clarissa was certain, as dear old Lord Lexham stood explaining that his wife had caught a cold at the Buckingham Palace garden party. She could see Peter in the corner, criticising her. And why did she do these things after all? Why did she try to rise to such heights and stand in the fire? But it was better to burn than to fade away, like Ellie Henderson. It was extraordinary how Peter put her into these states just by standing in the corner. He made her see herself, but in this extravagant way. It was foolish. But why did he come simply to criticise? Why always take, never give? He was wandering off now, and she must speak to him. But she would not get the chance. Lord Lexham was saying that his wife would not wear her coat at the garden party because,
My dear, you ladies are all alike.
Yet Lady Lexham was 75 at least. The dear old couple. She did like Lord Lexham, and her party did matter. It made her feel quite sick to know that it was all falling flat. Anything, any explosion, any horror was better than people wandering about, standing in the corner, not even caring to hold themselves upright, like Ellie Henderson. Gently, by the open window, the yellow curtain with its pattern of birds blew out, and it seemed as if the birds flew right into the room. Should the windows be open? Ellie Henderson wondered. It would not matter if she started sneezing tomorrow. It was the girls with their naked shoulders she worried about. She never gave a thought to her clothes, and had only thrown a large scarf over her old black dress, since her invitation to Clarissa's party had come at the last moment. She had a feeling that Clarissa had not meant to ask her this year. And why should she, except that they had grown up together? A party was a special occasion for her, just seeing the lovely clothes. Wasn't that Elizabeth in the pink dress, looking so grown up and very, very handsome? But girls no longer seemed to wear white for their first parties, as they had when she and Clarissa were young. So Ellie Henderson watched, not minding that she had no one to talk to, for they were all such interesting people. Politicians, she supposed, Richard Dalloway's friends. It was Richard who felt that he could not let the poor creature stand there all evening by herself. "Well, Ellie, and how's the world treating you?" he said, in his kindly way. And Ellie felt that it was extraordinarily nice of him to come and talk to her. The curtain with its birds flew out again, and Clarissa saw Ralph Lyon beat it back and go on talking. It was not a failure after all. It was going to be all right. Her party had begun. But she must stay at the top of the stairs for the present. People seemed to come all at once.
"Mr. and Mrs. Garrod. Mr. Hugh Whitbread. Lady Mary Maddox," announced Wilkins.
She had six or seven words with each, and they went on into the rooms, into something now, not nothing, since Ralph Lyon had beaten back the curtain. But it was too much effort. She was not enjoying it. Anybody could stand there and do this. And yet, rooted like a tree at the top of her stairs, she couldn't help feeling proud for making this happen. They kept coming up the stairs, one after another. Mrs. Mount and Celia, Herbert Ainsty, oh, and Lady Bruton. "How awfully good of you to come," she said. And she meant it. How odd it was, watching them going into the rooms, some quite old, some...
"Lady Rossiter,"
announced Wilkins. "Who? Who was Lady Rossiter?" "Clarissa!" She knew that voice. It was Sally Seton, after all these years. But she hadn't looked like that when Clarissa had come down the stairs at Boughton in a white dress to meet Sally Seton. Embarrassed, laughing, they kissed each other, first one cheek, then the other. She was passing through London, could not miss the chance of meeting again. "So I pushed myself in without an invitation." The spark had gone out of her, yet it was extraordinary to see her again. Older, happier, less lovely. Clarissa took Sally's hand, turned, saw her rooms full, heard the laughter, saw the curtains blowing, and Richard's roses.
"I have five enormous boys," said Sally,
still with her simple wish to be thought of first. And Clarissa loved her for still being like that. But Wilkins was commanding her to be serious with one name. The Prime Minister? Was it really? Ellie Henderson wondered. What a thing! He looked so ordinary, as if he might sell biscuits in a shop, but all dressed up in gold lace. And to be fair, when he went around, he did it very well. He tried to look important. It was amusing to watch. Nobody looked at him. They just went on talking. Yet it was perfectly clear how he mattered to them, standing for English society in the way that he did. Old Lady Bruton advanced, looking fine in her lace, and took him into a little room, which was whispered about and guarded at once. Ah, the Prime Minister!
"What snobs the English are," thought Peter Walsh. "How they admire gold lace.
and there was Hugh Whitbread, guarding the closed door, looking rather fatter and greyer. Peter had read his admirable letters in the Times, thousands of miles away in India, thankful that he was away from it all. Look at the man now, dancing forward, bending and bowing, as the Prime Minister and Lady Bruton came out. The admirable Hugh was making certain the world saw that he had something private to say to Lady Bruton as she passed. She nodded her fine old head, probably thanking him for some little thing he had done for her. And there was Clarissa now, taking her Prime Minister through the drawing room, effortlessly, as if floating on water in her silver-green dress. But age had brushed her, and her woodenness was warmed through. She had a great dignity about her, saying goodbye to the Prime Minister as if she wished the whole world well and must now leave. So she made Peter think. But he was not in love. Indeed, Clarissa felt, the Prime Minister had been good to come. Walking round the room with him, she had felt the happiness of the moment, and then the emptiness. And suddenly, seeing the Prime Minister go down the stairs, she remembered her enemy, Kilman. That was real. Ugh, how she hated her and her power over Elizabeth. Now Sir William and Lady Bradshaw were coming up the stairs. But they must find her if they wanted her. She was for the party. "Dear Sir Harry," she said, going up to her old friend, who was with Willie Titcombe and Herbert Ainsty, all of them laughing. Old Mrs. Hilberry touched her arm. Clarissa looked so like her mother tonight, as she had first seen her walking in a garden in a grey hat. And Clarissa's eyes filled with tears, thinking of her mother walking in a garden. But Professor Brearley and little John Hutton were not getting on, and she must interrupt their quarrel. How she wished she could steal John away and sit him down at the piano in the back room, for he played so beautifully. "But there is too much noise," she said. And there was old Aunt Helena in her white shawl, past 80 now, sitting in an armchair that Richard had found for her. But where was Peter? He and Aunt Helena had been such good friends. He could talk to her about India, for she had walked in its mountains, painting the flowers 60 years ago. Ah, here he was. "Come and talk to Aunt Helena about India," said Clarissa. But he had not spoken to her all evening. "We will talk later," said Clarissa, leading him up to old Miss Parry in her armchair. "You remember Peter Walsh?" said Clarissa. Old Helena Parry did not at first, but then it came back to her. He had been at Boughton, and Peter Walsh remembered leaving her in the drawing room that night when Clarissa had asked him to come boating. But here came Lady Bruton. "Richard was the greatest possible help with a letter," Lady Bruton said to Clarissa. "And there's Peter Walsh," she said. For Lady Bruton could never think of anything to say to Richard's wife, though she liked her. Really, it might have been better if Richard had married someone who could have helped him more in his work. She shook hands with that charming failure, Peter Walsh, who should have made a name for himself but hadn't, always in difficulties with women, and, of course, wonderful old Miss Parry.
"But was that Peter Walsh? His hair now grey?" Lady Rossiter, who had been Sally Seton, asked herself. "That was certainly old Miss Parry, who used to be so cross when Sally had stayed at Boughton. She would never forget running along the corridor naked and being sent for by Miss Parry. And there was Clarissa." Sally caught her by the arm. "I can't stay," Clarissa said. "Wait," she said, looking at her old friends, Peter and Sally. They must wait, she meant,
until all these people had gone.
I shall come back, she said.
But Sally's voice had lost its old wonderful richness. Her eyes were not as bright as they used to be when she had run down the corridor with no clothes on. She had stolen a chicken from the kitchen because she was hungry in the night. She had left an expensive book in the boat. But everybody loved her, except perhaps Papa. Her love of being the centre of everything and creating scenes would end in some awful tragedy, Clarissa used to think. Instead of which, she had married a man who owned factories in Manchester, and she had 5 boys. Sally and Peter were shaking hands, and Sally was laughing, remembering the past, no doubt. It was with the two of them, even more than with Richard, that Clarissa shared her past. But she must leave them, because there were the Bradshaws, whom she disliked. She must go up to Lady Bradshaw, dressed in grey and silver, and say... But Lady Bradshaw spoke first.
We are shockingly late, dear Mrs. Dalloway. We were embarrassed to come in, she said.
And Sir William, who looked very important, with his silver-grey hair and blue eyes, was talking privately to Richard, about politics probably. But why did the sight of him disturb her? He looked what he was, a great doctor, a man at the top of his profession, very powerful, rather tired. For think of the terrible decisions he had to make and what he had to see, people in the deepest unhappiness. Yet the sight of him made her feel that one wouldn't like Sir William to see one unhappy.
How is your son at Eton? She asked Lady Bradshaw.
He had just missed getting into the cricket team because he had been sick. But his father minded even more than he did, Lady Bradshaw thought,
being nothing but a great boy himself.
Clarissa looked at Sir William, talking to Richard. He did not look in the least like a boy. She did not know what it was about him that she disliked, and Richard agreed with her. But Sir William was extraordinarily knowledgeable. He was speaking quietly to Richard about something. The effects of the war on the mind. The government must discuss it. Wishing to share with Mrs. Dalloway a sisterly pleasure in their husband's great skill, Lady Bradshaw lowered her voice.
Just as we were leaving, my husband received a telephone call. A very sad case. A young man, that is what Sir William is telling Mr. Dalloway, had killed himself. He had been in the army.
Oh, thought Clarissa, in the middle of my party, he is deaf. She went on, into the little room where the Prime Minister had gone with Lady Bruton. Perhaps there was somebody there. But there was nobody. The splendid beauty of the party fell to the floor. How strange it was to come in alone in her evening dress. Why did the Bradshaws talk of death at her party? A young man had killed himself, and they talked of it at her party. He had killed himself. But how? Her body always felt it first, when she was told suddenly of an accident. Her body burned. He had thrown himself from a window. The ground had rushed up through him, breaking him. There he lay with a thud, thud, thud in his brain, before drowning in blackness. That's how she saw it. But why had he done it? He had thrown his life away. They went on living. She would have to go back to the party. The rooms were still crowded. People kept coming. They, all day she had been thinking of Peter, of Sally. They would grow old. He had held on to something that mattered, which in her own life lay hidden in dishonesty and lies. Death was not giving in. Death was an attempt to connect when knowing another was impossible.
One was alone, but not in death. But this young man, who had killed himself, had he plunged holding on to what mattered? Or had he gone to Sir William Bradshaw, that great doctor, yet to her, mysteriously evil, and felt Sir William's power over him? Perhaps that would make him feel, indeed, she felt it now, that life is unbearable. Then, she had felt it only this morning, there was the fear of life, this terror of living life to the end. Quite often, if Richard had not been near her, reading the Times, she might not have survived. But because he was close, she could hide like a bird with its head on its wing and gradually recover that love of life. But that young man had killed himself. It was her punishment to have escaped. She was forced to stand in her evening dress and to see a man disappear here, a woman there, falling down into the darkness. She was never wholly admirable. She had wanted success. And once she had been young and walked in the gardens at Boughton. It was due to Richard that she had never been so happy. Nothing could be slow enough. Nothing could last too long. No pleasure could be as great as having finished with the joys of youth. She walked to the window. Many times at Boughton, when they were all talking, or in London when she could not sleep, she had gone to look at the sky. However foolish the idea was, she felt the country sky at Boughton, this sky above Westminster, held something of her own in it. She opened the curtains. She looked. Oh, but how surprising! In the room opposite, the old lady stared straight at her. She was going to bed. It was fascinating to watch her moving about, crossing the room, coming to stand at her window. Could the old lady see her? It was fascinating, when people were still laughing and shouting in her drawing room, to watch that old woman, quite quietly, going to bed alone. Now the old lady pulled down her blind. The clock began striking. The young man had killed himself, but she did not pity him with all this going on. There! The old lady had put out her light. The whole house was dark now with all this going on, Clarissa repeated, and the words came back to her. Fear no more the heat of the sun. She must go back to them. But what an extraordinary night! She felt in a way very like him, the young man who had killed himself. She felt glad that he had done it, had thrown his life away while they went on living. The clock was striking. The echoes faded in the air. But she must go back. She must find Sally and Peter.